Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan, cannot confirm or deny what we'll get to in about an hour. Caught up with Sheldon Keefe earlier this afternoon. It was good to catch up with him before he gets ready for Thursday night. He understands the history of these two teams going at it, and he also made it pretty clear. I mean, it's been a long layoff. They're chomping at the bit. They want to get going. And I think Edmonton and Winnipeg, I'm sure they're in the same spot, but at least they get to play tomorrow night.
Sure.
You're right. Like, you want to get out there first, get going, set the pace. And these four teams have known what's coming for quite some time.
They have, and to your point, like, they're sitting there watching, and I know, you know, Calgary and Vancouver are playing right now, and they're going to play again. Like, they're done, but the regular season will be done. And, like, they want to get rocking. Like, Boston, Washington, they're at 1-1 already. Like, it's crazy. And both overtimes, too. Like,
that's been great hockey, too, man. Wow.
It really has been. Like, it's been, I would say so far, I can't think of a dog of a game.
No.
Like, even that Colorado game was, like, St. Louis.
They got outplayed, though, pretty thoroughly.
But like Colorado's fun to watch. Like, that's the thing. Like, Colorado's
some
like
of the best hockey. We've all been around the game forever, our whole lives. It's some of the best hockey I've ever watched.
Yeah.
Like, Tampa Bay, Florida, and I know you guys probably discussed it yesterday. That's as good as it gets, man. That's as good as it gets. That's nasty. That's top-end players playing at the top level in the game. And it's got everything, penalties, ups, downs, lead changes. That's as good as the brand gets.
Yeah, it really is. That is what you bottle and you sell. Like, if you're a marketing department and you work for the National Hockey League, throw that thing on a loop.
Yes.
And say that's what we're trying to sell, which says something about the two teams involved. We're talking about Tampa and Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not exactly, you know, hotbed hockey markets, but they get back at it tonight. And again, goalie change in net for the Florida Panthers. Bobrovsky's coming out. And
yeah.
Seems like a little bit of a desperate move. Like, maybe it was the plan anyway.
Yeah, I didn't think he played bad. It just might be a different, you know, maybe Q didn't like something or saw something that, you know, Driedger had a pretty good record against Tampa, I believe, too. There's another scenario. Like, this has to be, in their mind, a must win. Like, getting down 2-0. Like, you've got to – and Driedger's had a fantastic year. He's going to – be an
Darren
interesting
Driedger.
Case study for me. Yes, Darren Driedger. He's going to be an interesting case study because he's unrestricted, and I know there's a few teams that are sniffing around him.
Oh, my God. He'll sign for $4 million minimum.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, what is he? Is he he's
somebody will pay
really
to find out,
goaltender.
Noodles, don't you think?
I don't disagree. Oh, I think he's a good goaltender. I just where is he going to be a fit? How much? You know, how much term? There has been – guys out there, I know you're going to say Scott Darling. That was a scenario where, you know, Darling got paid. And
Q gave him some love, though, this year. It's like a lot. You watch Florida play, and then you see the little handshake on the highlight pack or the game or whatever, how you paid attention. You would see Darren Driedger a lot in the net, man. Q's got faith in him.
Yeah, he played well. Like, his numbers would indicate that. And I do think it's a must win. I think that was a big missed opportunity for them a couple of nights ago to set the tone. Like, they're the team that needs to prove it, right? Like, Tampa's they won the cup a year ago. They know who they are, what they have. It's Florida that's got to prove they can keep up. And I think it's imperative they do what Boston did last night.
No kidding. If Darren Driedger blows tonight, you're done.
You're probably done. You go back to Tampa down 2-0 against that team, you're probably done.
Yep.
And, you know, that's the beauty of a series where we know too much based on our history, based on watching this sport for as long as we have, that one game doesn't have to mean anything. Doesn't have to, but there's pressure points, you know, and if you go down 1-0, the pressure clearly elevates and you've got to bounce back. And Boston did that last night. Quickest OT winner in Bruins history, Brad Marchand. I didn't realize and I didn't remember the Bobby Orr flying through the air OT winner was in like 40 seconds into overtime.
Yeah, I didn't know that
either. I didn't know that.
But, you know.
That looked like a fifth overtime kind of goal.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It was for a sweep over St. Louis. 40 seconds into overtime.
Well,
great picture, though.
It's a great picture. If you actually look, I believe Bobby Plager was on the ice who just recently passed, but Noel Picard was the other defenseman who just cuts his feet right out. Like, if you look
that's
at the play,
man.
He just, like, Like, that's the McCabe can opener times two. Like, he just grabs his feet
right.
and hooks him, and that's it. Like, you're done. And or still scores the goal. But it's kind of funny. But that I didn't realize the context of it. I think we all are familiar with the picture. And,
of course, yeah.
And or scoring. But I had no idea, you know, what time of the game it was. Like, I knew
40 seconds
overtime,
in. I found that out last night, that Marchand scored that quickly and set a new franchise record passing
that's
Bobby Orr.
Awesome.
That was a cool celebration, too, him jumping onto the bench. And Taylor Hall looks like a totally new man. I mean, he scored an impressive goal last night in terms of him being, you know, he started the play and he went to the front of the net.
Yeah.
Right? And he battled for position and he put one home. And he's right in the forefront of the celebration with Marchand. He looks like he's comfortable there. He looks like he's found his role. And he looks like a guy who is basically telling the world, and I think this has been reported, like, I don't want to be the man. I'm not the number one guy. You know, put me on the second line, and I'll chip in. He's Phil Kessel, basically.
Yeah.
He's like, Phil. I'm really talented, really good, but I can't lead you anywhere on my own.
There's
like,
nothing
not
wrong
happen.
With that. There's nothing wrong with that. Like,
nothing
that's the thing. Like, sometimes you just slot perfectly on a – now, it can't get lost that David Krejci is such a good centerman, so it's nice to play with somebody who can distribute the puck. You know, Jake DeBrusk has got 2 goals in 2 games. He didn't have a great season this year. Like, half the reason why they felt they needed to add to that, basically that top nine, DeBrusk was supposed to be your second-line left winger. Marchand, DeBrusk. DeBrusk 2 years ago, I believe, had, off the top of my head, I want to say 23 or 28 goals. Mm-hmm. And
I like seeing that kid score a couple goals.
I love him, too.
I like him a lot.
I do, too. It just, he didn't have...
No,
by the standard that he's been setting, a great season. But that's what we talk about. I can think of a couple guys, Taylor Hall and Jake DeBrusk, didn't have great regular seasons. Kyle Palmieri didn't have a great regular season when he went over to the Islanders. Guess who's scoring in the playoffs? Those three.
It's a blank slate, isn't it?
Blank slate,
like, you get there, and it's completely irrelevant what happened beforehand.
Agreed.
Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. I don't know if you had any examples of that in your own career, Ray, where you felt like your regular season just wasn't good enough, or for whatever reason it wasn't working, whether it's injuries, line mates, the team, but blank slate come playoff time and you felt like refreshed and here we go. And I could prove that the regular season is completely irrelevant, basically redeem yourself.
Well, for me, for sure, the one example I have is 93. I broke my leg and dislocated my ankle, and when was that? December. And I missed 3 months. I played 5 games before the playoffs started. Like, I mean, I don't even think I touched the puck. And then I got 13 goals in 18 games in the playoffs. Like, the year was a total write-off, right? It was like I just rehabbed most of the year. And then all of a sudden I'm scoring all the time. I'm like, man, it's the best. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about, like, DeBrusk not having a great regular season and – you know, Palmieri.
Healthy scratch, right, Noodles?
Healthy scratch
a couple times.
And realistically, like, I had thought that they didn't really need to go get Taylor. If Jake DeBrusk had a really good season this year, I don't know if Taylor Hall would have fit there on that left side, because he probably would be your second-line left winger. Am I wrong with that?
No, and then now all of a sudden they're like, because Hall's, you know, looking like Taylor Hall that we remember from a few years ago, which I didn't see happening, but man, he's been awesome. Like, now you look and you go, man, that's a pretty good team again. Their D is really thin, but that's a pretty good team.
Yep.
Ray, you weren't obviously the most physical guy, but you were ultra talented. Mm-hmm. How did you combat playoff hockey? I mean, the Leafs are going into Montreal. Montreal, I'm sure they're going to want to be physical and finish hits and yada, yada. How did you as a skill player combat that with the physicality of it and still find a way with your skill to succeed?
Better as I got older, because when I was younger, I was going to show everybody how tough I was, and like, I wasn't going to be intimidated, and I took a bunch of penalties and, like, shockingly, a bunch of slashing penalties, and like, you know, like, what a dummy. So I'm slashing some guy across the ass of the pants. It sounds like a bass drum. Hey, you, go to the penalty box.
Yeah.
And so as I got older, I was like, I just play through the whistle. I know I'm going to get hit a lot. I didn't really think, I don't know if you felt this, but I don't think I played much different other than to think all the time, the game's faster. It's just faster. Everything you do, faster, faster, faster. But I was smart, so I could still play. Like, you were a smart player. You could still play when it went fast. The guys, I think, have the biggest trouble is they get all tied up in, you know, the intensity, and they take, you know, they take uncharacteristic penalties. But then also the guys that don't think very fast. The game's too fast. Like, look at these games, man. Like, they're like, the guys are on rocket ships.
Mm-hmm. Then you realize, like, the real great players. I can remember playing games in Pitt, and there would be a couple shifts to start the game where you're like, man, this is hyper speed. And then 66 would step on the ice, and he would look like he'd be going half a mile an hour, and he'd have the puck the whole night, and you're like, what the hell is going on here? I am chasing it around, and I can't even touch the puck. And this guy wheels out there and puts his elbow on the dasher board while there's a delayed penalty and gets the puck and has it all night. That's when you know that they were just that much better than everybody else.
Well, I'm looking at these first couple nights of the playoffs, right? And I'm like, what MacKinnon did last night and what Kucherov did the other night, like, it's like they play at a different level.
Sure.
Like, I turned away. That game was 1-1 last night. I turned away to, you know, actually, I was making popcorn. I turned away to make some popcorn. I turned around and like, how the hell did he score already? Yeah. Like, they're just so fast. Like, things can change so fast, and those guys are so good. The real game changers, man, they're, like you say, oh, they're just at a different level. To be the best of the best is always been kind of remarkable to me.
With Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, in terms of what we're looking towards Thursday night, the lineups have effectively been shown. I mean, both coaches, you're running through lines, you're running through practice. We know who's going on Thursday night. From a Leafs standpoint, not a ton of surprises. I mean, Riley Nash will play. You've got a fourth line where Spezza's going to be in the middle of the ice. Campbell's going to start, but we've known that for quite some time. Maybe some debate on Bogosian based on health. But it's the Habs and their lineup decisions that I think are really gaining the most traction at this point, because Caulfield will not play. Kotkaniemi will not play. Romanov will not play. So the three kids are not going to play. Eric Staal and Corey Perry on the same line as of now. And like, they're going.
I hope they play against Spezza.
Well,
just saying, all five of those old guys out there together.
I think you're going to see it. It's going to be slow, but it'll be high hockey IQ and big bodies, and you know.
I just think it's kind of, isn't it crazy? Like, that five of those guys, like, I don't even know what their games played total would be, like, way over 5,000.
Oh yeah,
and you're like, man, that's it's kind of neat to see. I think.
Absolutely, like the stall. Staal, Perry, Thornton, Spezza, you're right, would be over 5,000 for sure.
Is Frolik on one of those lines? Sorry to interrupt.
No, he's out right now.
He's on the gray line.
He's not going. But, like, the one thing that kind of sticks out, and I feel like it's a bit of a game of chess, is both coaches and both teams are really putting an emphasis on the veterans, the size, the grit. And I wonder if there's going to be an overcompensation from either one of the teams. And I think based on how game one goes, maybe game two, that's likely the adjustment. Wouldn't it be like at some point one of these coaches might say, I got to get Caulfield in, or I got to get Galchenyuk's, you know, skating in, or whatever it is. And that's likely going to be the position of change and the philosophy change between games one and two or two and three.
I don't know where else they could go. The difference is, like, you know, if you put Galchenyuk in, he's a little bit older. In Montreal, of course, the dust is kicked around there because people are like, oh, they're leaving. Caulfield had 4 goals in 7 games. They want that kid in the lineup. And maybe he will get in. And I think it's likely he will get in. But they are aware that Kotkaniemi hasn't scored in 25 games, right?
Right.
Like, like Dominic Ducharme's analogy today, I don't know if you guys read it. I thought it was awesome. He was talking about, you know, kind of a twist on the hammer and the nail. And he's like, you bang a nail and eventually it starts to get bent. And then you keep banging it in and it keeps getting more bent. That's what Kotkaniemi's game is. We haven't had time to straighten it out and to fix it. And I'm like, that's kind of right. I think he's going to be a good player. But his game's gone sideways. And whether he's a number 3 pick in the draft or not, he hasn't scored in 25 games. Mm-hmm. Like 25.
Yeah. What about the other guy, Ray?
Well, okay, so who do you take out if you're, you know, I'm sure they're probably worried or balancing a little bit of if they put Caulfield in, do you take Lehkonen out, which doesn't sound like much, except he's one of their penalty killers.
Yeah, that's
right. Like maybe they don't feel like they got enough of that either.
I just think it's a tough spot. Find somewhere for him. I don't know. 4 goals, 10 games, dynamic player.
4-7. You're right. Like I don't disagree.
I'm with you guys. I'm with you. Like, I think, what do you think, guys? Like, do you think this is, I don't know if this is just because I was, I always think offense is the best, but like, I think at some point, if you're always reacting, we got to stop them. We've got to be as big as them. We've got to, eventually, don't you just have to be what you are? Like something good, like we want to be aggressive. Like maybe that'll happen in games 2 or 3 for Montreal. If they come out and lose 3-1, 3-1 or something like that, well, then you got to get offense in, right? Then Caulfield's going to go in for game 3. I think it's entirely unlikely that he doesn't play in this series. I think he'll play for sure.
I agree. The only thing, too, is, you also have to follow the path, too. Like, I don't think either team is going to be 100% healthy, given if it's going to be a physical. Like, you're seeing guys leaving, like Washington, Lars Eller, like left. Like guys are, it's going to happen through the physicality, through the wear and tear. So injuries might just point to, hey, this guy's out, let's insert this. Like that's the beauty of having everyone healthy, knock on wood, and having depth is like, okay, well, we've got another player like this you can plug and play right here. Montreal, they've chosen to go with that. I would find a way for Caulfield, but ultimately that's what they're going for game 1. Doesn't mean they can't readjust it in game 2.
They're under a lot of pressure there, I think. It's been a kind of a difficult season that started out really, really interesting, and Bergevin signed a bunch of guys in the offseason. It really looked pretty good. And then after that great start, man, did they ever struggled, right? They went sideways for about 2 months. And I think there's a lot of pressure on them. I know there's a lot of pressure on the Leafs, and there should be, because they're a good team and are favored in this series. But I kind of sense Montreal needs something good to happen early in the series. Just even if they don't win the first game, but they can't get out there and just get skunked away. They've got to have something good for themselves to feel like they got a chance in this series, I think.
Yeah, I don't dispute it within the organization for sure. Sheldon Keefe actually touched on it today, kind of throwing the pressure back onto Montreal, saying they've made adjustments, they've made moves, they've picked up guys like Staal and Perry, et cetera, with the idea that they're built for the playoffs. And I'm sure
Toronto picked up the same thing.
Oh, of course. No, he's acknowledging – he's playing the pressure game. He knows that the pressure's on the Leafs, but he's also trying to say, hey, go talk to them about pressure. And I think what he's suggesting is – I think there's pressure on the GM, right? Like this is – he's been there for a long time. This is we've been talking about it all year. They're built for the playoffs. Well, you're here now. You made it. You barely made it, but you made it. So now you got to prove that those building blocks you kept talking about, this is when it's supposed to pay off. And that's where the pressure comes from. I don't know externally in Montreal. It's a smart hockey market. I don't think they feel like they got a great team. I don't know if Habs fans are thinking that this team should win a Stanley Cup. From where Leaf fans do think that should be the case or close to.
Well, right. I go on radio there twice a week. They're frothing. Like they're like, okay, when? If it's not now, when? And that's the push of like, why not Caulfield? If we're not good enough, why not Caulfield now? If we're not good enough, why not Kotkaniemi now? And of course the answer is because they want to win this series. The coach is an interim coach. He wants a good showing here so he can be more than an interim coach.
Right.
Absolutely.
Like, there's a lot of things tied there together in Montreal that are just underneath the surface. And you touched on one, there's a lot of pressure on Bergevin. He's been there a long time, and I thought they had a really good off season. They and Calgary really disappointed me this year. I thought they would both be better.
Well, Vancouver probably falls in line with that, and there's a lot of
I didn't think
there.
They'd be better. I
didn't think they'd be this bad. I had them. I can't remember where I had them, but it became abundantly clear pretty quickly that this was not going to be their year.
you
but there's
the
a lot
music?
Of smoke out there in your hometown.
Yeah.
Undertaker music? Is that what you're calling for here?
Because do you want a little taste of it?
Maybe a little bit. Okay. Give us a little taste. The Undertaker. Paul Bearer, because there's some concern.
Yes.
There's some concern that there could be some movement in the front office out there.
There's chatter, let's call
it. There's chatter, and even the Sedins are maybe getting a call from ownership. What do you make of what could be on the verge of happening out there in Vancouver?
Well, this I know for a fact because I live here. The frustration of what's gone on with the Canucks, the disappointment of not being a competitive team, the overestimation of what they were coming out of last year's playoff, it's all come together into like this, like people are mad, and then once they're past mad, they're totally apathetic. Like the Canucks don't excite. They've got some exciting players, but they don't excite. They, in my opinion, they need a complete refresh almost of the brand. And so if I just tweeted out just a few minutes before we started, like if they're indeed talking about an overhaul, they need to talk to the Sedins. Like you need to get Daniel and Henrik involved in this, mainly because the people love them out here. They would help refresh what people think of them, and they're also smart enough to know what they don't know to go hire somebody that does know. You know what they need here? They need somebody like Jimmy Rutherford. They need somebody that's been around for a long time, that's been in every role in management to help restructure where they're at. Like they're in 14 different directions, guys. I mean, they got these young guys, Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and, young guy, Bo Horvat, and so on, so on. But then they got a whole bunch of guys that they spent $20 million on this year that never score for them. Like they're neither here nor there. And so that, like, something has to change because this should be a really energetic market. It's an angry, disillusioned market. They've been in the NHL since 1967, right? There's been a lot of years that haven't gone so well, and I think they're reasonable to say we want better, we want more excitement, we want to feel like we're going in the right direction. Right now, it just feels like it's going in a bunch of different directions.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to figure out obviously what you have. I do think they've got some pretty good core pieces,
yeah.
Right?
Like
goalie's
good.
Goalie's good. Demko had a big platform. Your Quinn Hughes has got to shake some stuff out, but the talent is there. The offensive ability is there, right? You know, Pettersson, Besser, there's pieces. The issue is the cap, I think, and they've got to let some contracts just kind of fade away.
But that's the point that I make out here, Brian, is that Jim Benning said, we need two more years and we're going to be, this team's going to be really good. And he might be right. However, the reason they need two more years is because their management team signed all these guys.
Right.
They didn't inherit them. They signed them all. And by the way, they just signed Tanner Pearson, who I like. I think he's a decent player. But they signed him for 3 years at $3.5 million right before the deadline. Like, what was the rush? Like, why 3 years? Now you want to talk about a core piece? He's one of them. Because you signed him for $3.5 million.
Right. You got to protect him and everything. With Seattle right around the corner. Like, that's part of the complication as well, is someone's going to go.
Well,
someone you might like.
And they haven't signed the coach, or I don't know what the hell they're doing there. Like, they're going to let Travis Green go to market? Or, like, that's the type of stuff that I think – Ray, you're obviously in the market. I read a lot there, and I have a couple buddies in there that are very, very passionate Vancouver fans, so put it that way. They're always cooking up trades and stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah. I will tell you this. The Canucks Twitter is entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, one of my buddies is like, what are they waiting for on Green? What's the holdup there? But yet, it's – I guess you got to sort out your house at the top to see if Jimmy Benning's going to be the guy to even sign Travis Green. You know what I mean?
I don't. If they're looking at an overhaul, it's going to slow things down as far as Travis, I would assume. Because if they're, you know, if they're looking at a president, if they're looking at a director of hockey operations, if they're looking at a GM, all that's got to be done before you get the coach signed. And then if you're Travis Green, like, are you going to sit around and wait for all that to be done? Right. No, because you want to coach next year.
Yeah.
And so there is some immediacy to this, I think. The other part is, if you're making a general manager change, you can't let this linger, because the decisions the general manager's making will impact the next guy.
Right.
And so I don't even know if they're at that point yet. Like, are they? They're talking about they're going to do exit interviews, and they're, you know, I'm reading about they're going to have other people sitting involved, and I'm like, man, you better be moving along here, or else you're going to get to the draft, and then who's in charge?
Yeah. Well, that you get it exactly, and you keep bringing in consultants and people that, you know, even if it's the Sedins, Jeff Courtnell, a bunch of names, and obviously they have the respective ownership and the fan base, but someone's got to get up on the podium and make a call. You know, someone's
got to
determine.
You know what's the best part of being Brian? Here's the best part about being a consultant, is you just consult and then you go home.
Exactly.
You give them your opinion, they pay you, and then you go home.
It's the best gig, like, going.
Oh, man, you want people with skin in the game. And if it's Jeff Courtnell and Henrik and Daniel, if some combination of that's involved, their skin in the game is to connect to people to hire. Like, none of those three would tell you, yeah, I could be the general manager. They've never been in management of any kind. Like, how could that be? I don't think you got to go back to the old retread general manager all the time. But you got to have some experience.
Yeah, I love that. Like, they just say somebody, somebody's on TV and they're like, that guy should be the president of a team. Like, I'm not exactly the tech savviest person, but I wouldn't even know how to sign a guy to a contract.
we would be consultants.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, the thing is, though, like, I don't know how many times they're like, yeah, it's a fireable offense. Like, there's been a lot of fireable offenses in O's management team. Like, there would be, you would have a revolving
Garth
door
Brooks.
Of people.
Anyone that likes Garth Brooks, you're fired. It's a fireable offense.
No, we had a...
Noodles had a story. One of his coaches in junior played that song, Standing Outside the Fire, and they went out and lost 5-0 in the first period.
Actually, unfortunately, I think the coach was at the National Hockey League level.
Oh, that's even worse.
But, yeah, we were going out, and our coach gave us the speech, like, hey, we got to play well, blah, blah, blah. And then on the TV, you know, where they put the VHS tapes and that, was Garth Brooks Standing Outside the Fire. And as we, like, went out, that song was playing. And I want to say we were playing Buffalo that night. It was 5-0 after the first we came in. And Garth didn't inspire us whatsoever.
What an inspirational speech.
Yeah. Okay, so this has got nothing to do with the speech, but it just reminded me of this. We're playing in L.A., and Jamie Storr is in goal for us. We lose the opening faceoff. The guy gets to the red line, dumps it in. Storzy goes behind the net, it hits something in the corner, bounces out, the guy scores. We're in L.A. at home, and it's, I don't know, 4 seconds into the game, and they start playing You Can't Always Get What You Want. Noodles, we did that on the bench. We were, oh, my God, it was, and this guy sitting right behind the bench, no glass there. He's like, not again.
He's seen too many bad teams, man. Too many bad teams.
That
it can be tricky, man. It can be sneaky. That the wrong song or the right song, for that matter, can set you off one way or the other. It's very important.
Standing outside the fire. Yep, it's 5-0. We're outside of every fire.
Right, or we're right in the middle of the fire, whichever way you want to look at it. Because didn't exactly go the way you had it planned, Coach. Thanks, Skipper. Though, we appreciate it. Maybe next time we'll win one for the Gipper. Work on that speech and the soundtrack next time we have a big game. Anyway, we got three big games tonight. The three home teams are all down 0-1 in the series, which is kind of crazy. Pittsburgh, Florida, and Vegas. So we'll see what happens there. And we got some Canadian content tomorrow night, so we'll start teeing that up tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, finally get everybody going.
Can't wait. Yeah. Should be a good one. All right, buddy.
Talk to you, boys. Later.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. We will get into this picture of a gentleman down at Kiawah Island preparing for the PGA Championship, a patron, a fan, and what he was up to. And I think Kyle Lowry tipped his hand on what he's looking for in terms of where he wants to be next or what he's willing to accept to be wherever he's going to be next. We'll play some audio from Kyle. We'll get into it. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, confirm or deny in about a half an hour. Jays back in action tonight. And they got a big 10-game stretch coming up. You got the Red Sox down at Dunedin starting tonight. Then you're taking on Tampa. Then you're at New York. So this is going to be a massive 10-game run here for the Blue Jays. And we'll tee that up a little bit later in the afternoon. There's a lot of baseball news out there. You see Tony La Russa, the manager of the White Sox, upset with his own player. Mercedes hit a home run on a 3-0 count last night. The Twins have been awful this year. Awful. And it's one of those codes that were broken. But what makes this unique is it was La Russa who spoke out against his own player, right, for hitting the home run on a 3-0 count in a blowout game in the ninth. And La Russa said today, quote, he made a mistake. There will be a consequence he has to endure here within our family, end quote.
It was like the guy threw a pizza. These guys are so good. Maybe he just took a swat at it and went out, man. Like, was he supposed to just strike out and let that thing go by him?
Well, he would have walked if, it, like, it's a three
count. Well, I know, but it's like, when you throw a pitch like that, somebody can has the right to hit it out of the park, man. It was honestly a pizza right down the middle.
Exactly. And that was what, like, the Twins were just trying to get out of the game. And both teams kind of had an understanding, like, let's just get out of the game. The issue with, I don't see what he's supposed to do there because it's a 3-0 count. Why would you want to walk and extend the game? You know, like, if you walk, it's not equally as embarrassing. And I don't know what the code is there on. Obviously, the situation is it's a 3-0 count. You take the pitch. You're smoking this team. But who cares? The game's over anyway.
Well, when the code comes in, Hayes, isn't it the sign of the cross he did, like crossing home plate? I'm like, dude.
He's padding stats, man. Like, listen, a home run in the majors is a home run in the majors.
Right.
But Tony La Russa has been so out of touch all year. This is a guy who didn't understand the rules a couple weeks ago. They were playing an interleague game, and he didn't know the rules of the extra inning. And where if it was the pitcher who was the last out, he doesn't have to be the man to start on second base. He admitted to it after the game. He's like, I didn't even know that. It's like, that's a good start. And, you know, it's like, what are you going to do here? What are you going to do, Tony? Like, your own family, he's going to have to pay a price. How are you planning on handling that?
That sounds like that. Like he's the Don. Like, it sounds like he's going to take somebody out behind the woodshed.
That's where the bringing in the grizzled veteran manager that's just out of touch is just not the right thing to do.
And they're such a good team. Like, the Sox are going to run away with that division. That division's terrible. And they're going to run away with it. They're going to win 95 games and run away with it. And they're young. They're talented. They're exciting. They get arguably the best offense in baseball. And then you got Tony La Russa, who thinks it's 1985 still.
Honestly,
he's just completely out of touch.
I know that guy from St. Louis. Like,
of course.
He'd let us sit in the dugout with him. During
old school. He's had a great run. He's one of the great managers of all time based on his resume. Hall of Fame manager, no doubt about it. But he's, what is he, 75 now? He's really out of touch.
Imagine hiring a guy that's 75.
Yeah, that one was a
shock.
Well,
it depends
on
if they're, like, there are some people who are 75 who are, like, sharp and still get it and understand it. And then there are other people that are 75 that treat things like it's still 1980. That's the difference. And sounds like he's one of those, like an older school guy. And, yeah, I'm not familiar with the rules and all of that. Like, well, if you're a manager of a team, you might want to make sure you're privy to the new rules that have been implemented.
I would think so. Like,
you know,
just
I mean?
Because you left the game for a while doesn't mean the game stopped.
Right.
You know, the Constitution or rule book was frozen in time.
I just, it's, you don't want to embarrass anybody, but I just, that pizza down the middle, man, like,
yeah,
it's almost like you want to embarrass the game by throwing that thing. I'm just going to swat at it and see where it goes. I don't know.
Yeah, and listen, it's an interdivision battle. Maybe what La Russa is concerned about is retaliation, but the Twins have to – they got to figure their own house out. Like, the Twins, they're terrible right now. And The Sox are not. So we'll get more into this in the baseball scene of the Blue Jays taking on the Sox tonight into the 6 p.m. hour. The PGA Championship is set to start on Thursday. So we'll make our picks tomorrow. We're going to do our back and forth. I think we have to allow Noodles to make a couple of picks.
How did my picks work out? I thought we did pretty well.
Yeah, right? Really well. You had Sam Burns, who was second alone. You had Daniel Berger, who snuck in T3 or T5. You picked him. Spieth had a pretty good
really
weekend.
Really good.
Yeah, you had three like really quality picks.
How did the guy who looked like Happy Gilmore's caddy do?
Zalatoris? I don't think he made the cut. Yeah, like you missed the cut by shooting 500 par. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Ricky Fowler shot 65-75 and missed the cut. Harry Higgs was 500, missed the cut.
Harry Higgs is dropping some poundage.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. He looks pretty good. And we'll see. I don't think he's in the field at Kiawa this week.
Yeah, he is. He's there.
Is Harry? Okay, there you go. So he's on your radar, Noodles. You got to write his name down.
He might be the pick. You never know.
He should be. This course, this is the longest course in major tournament history. It's playing over 7,800 yards. The weather is supposed to be, like, perfect. I don't think there's going to be a ton of wind. If there is wind, I mean, we might – if there was wind for four straight days with 7,800-plus yards in a really tough course anyway, you might be looking at plus one, plus two being the winner. I'm not sure how these guys are going to score. This is a course where you ask it every single time. What would Brian Hayes shoot on this course from the tips? This one I'd have to disqualify. There are holes where I couldn't get to the fairway. Like, I just couldn't from the tips. Number two, number four. It's like a 270-yard carry from the tips. Like, I there's no way I could do it. No way I could do it.
It's a monster. Right. And if the fan starts blowing, Justin Thomas said today, Hayes, if the fan's blowing out here, you just cannot put the tees on the back of every hole. Or it's just unplayable.
Yeah, exactly. They got to be smart. Like, they have the ability to move tees around, I think, on 14 different holes. I think that's what they were saying yesterday. Four of them, it's locked in. They're not moving. But 14 different holes, they can move around based on the wind. And that's going to make it, I think, very compelling. It's going to be a great tournament. It's a major championship.
Yeah. I just can't wait till it gets to 17, that par three. That's where Bernie Langer just great white sharded it and lost the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, that's a beast of a hole, man.
You've got to create like a top 20 or maybe top 10 great white shart.
Well, like we're doing Shart Week.
Yeah, Shart Week's coming. But we haven't forgot about that. Don't you worry, Noodle. Shart Week is – the wheels are in motion. We're going to make that happen a little bit later on. But there was a picture that's gone viral here because we've talked about different golf fans in the past, guys who wore golf shoes. And we got Feshchuk to cop to it. Like, he – remember he was trying to dance around. Well, it's not
water,
the worst idea.
Wet.
And what about – and then you basically asked him. You're like, that means you wear golf shoes to golf tournaments. And he goes, yeah, I do.
No, so, he said it's because it keeps his feet dry.
Yeah, he claims traction as if he's out there like a caddy dragging a bag around. The guys, you're on concrete the whole time. You're walking up and down the cart path if need be. And if not, who cares? I mean, you're not playing. Who cares if you have a little bit of moisture on your shoes? So golf shoe guy is someone you do see from time to time. I have told you this before. I have seen golf glove guy before, and you guys didn't believe me. Yeah. Well, we have video evidence. Well, I guess a picture evidence of a guy at the tournament today. There he is with a golf glove on, watching, you know, the boys warm up.
He's got a beer in his hand.
Crushing
at least
tall cans.
I kind of
respect
that.
It's gonna be a packed house down there too. South Carolina, they're wide open.
That's the thing. Like, are you guys getting used to it? Like, now we're starting to see, you know, now what we're excited about, like, playoff hockey and basketball and everything that's coming up, you're seeing fans.
No, I'm not excited, Jamie. You know why? Because it's not even close in this country.
Well,
so
you're
that's
right.
Why I'm
not excited.
It's an embarrassment.
I believe we're 6 months behind the U.S. on
that
progression.
No kidding. That's what's embarrassing.
I understand that. But my point is I'm kind of getting excited to see, like, I'm getting my head wrapped around it. Like, regardless if there's 12,000 people in the stand. Like, that Carolina game last night, I don't think we've touched on that. Like, there was 12,000 people there. It felt like 100,000 people.
Felt like a packed house.
That, there was more than 12,000 people in that building, wasn't there?
Well, I believe that
was what they claimed 12 grand. It looked like they might have snuck in some more. Well, you see the story out of Quebec where they're saying maybe the Habs for game six could have 2,500 people in the building.
Oh, great. Yeah, great, great.
Now, 2,500 people, that in a building the size of the Bell Center, that's going to be really scattered. I don't think that's really going to do a lot. You know, it's not like they're I'd take it for sure, happily. And I don't see why we can't do it here in Ontario in terms of, like, frontline workers who have been twice vaccinated. Why can't they go to the rink? I don't – we haven't even broached that topic.
Right.
Because we don't operate that way in this province. But it appears as if that's what they're moving towards in Montreal because of the curfew being dropped and because of the ability for, I guess, attendance and the amount of people and capacity within buildings as of March or May 28th. And Game 6 is May 29th.
Well, you got to make it to Game 6 first.
Got to make it to Game 6.
Then secondly, it would be kind of neat just because if that's your test subject, you know, if there's a scenario like, hey, let's see how this unfolds, like it would be, I mean, you're going to have to crawl before you walk. Like, what is going to be patient X? Like, that's maybe that's patient X for fans in the building here. Are they trying, are they even thinking about it in Edmonton or Winnipeg right now?
I don't see why not. Like, it, you know, there is a difference between in an enclosed building and an open roof, you know, building.
Right,
but
right.
Obviously down in the States, they're doing it. And in terms of vaccinations, in terms of numbers, you know, you can compare our situation to certain areas in the States. It's more about our mentality and what we're willing to accept and what we're willing to do and what is even available to us. Where down there, they're taking a very different approach. And people are taking advantage of it. And they're saying, I'll go. You let me go, I'll go. And I guarantee you that would apply here. I guarantee it. I guarantee you could fill the Scotiabank Arena for Game 1 Thursday night.
Not even a question.
100% you could. If you open it up and said anyone that's willing to do it, if you're an adult and you want to go, we'll let you in the building, they'd have a lineup all the way up to Muskoka trying to get in there.
Where my statue is for the legend.
Where your statue. Well, your statue's a bit south of that. It's
thanks. It's in Barrie, off, you said before.
It's in Barrie, yes. Bayfield Street. North end of Barrie.
Yeah.
not quite where the rink is, but a little bit further north. But a quality street. Georgian Mall, shout out. Love it.
Right.
Kyle Lowry speaking earlier today. Tip of his hand in terms of what he's looking for. We'll play that clip. We'll get into it next. All right, confirm or deny in about 10 minutes. Tee up the Jays Sox series tonight into the next hour as well. Masai Ujiri will speak tomorrow morning. You can hear that live right here on TSN Radio. That's starting around 9 a.m. And Kyle Lowry had his end-of-the-season presser earlier today. He was in a pretty jovial mood, but he was asked the question, like, what's the plan here for the future, and what are you looking for, and what is important when you're seeking out a new deal? And here's what he had to say earlier today.
To be honest with you, my family will be a major factor in this. You know, and also, you know, money talks and years talk and all that stuff. And let's be real, right? You know, I play this game for the love of the game. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I want to make sure my family is still taken care of for generations.
That's all I need to hear in terms of the Raptors basically holding the trump card here in terms of whether or not you want to bring him back.
Right.
Because they can offer him more. They've got his bird rights. They can go above the cap. And he's
question
looking
is,
for term. How, and he's looking for money.
How much you want to pay him for winning the championship 2 years ago? That's what it comes down to.
Well, he's still got game left, though. He can still play.
He does.
How much does he have is a legit question and reasonable one.
Well, let me ask. How much does he make right now? 30?
Yeah, about that.
So he makes $30 million a year. So what's the difference between 22 and 25 to somebody who probably has a net worth of, you know, 100 million?
Well, I don't know what that's
like
worth.
I mean,
that's in a world that I'm not familiar with. But I understand what you're driving at. But I think it also comes down to a chip on the shoulder, respect.
Right.
You know, Lowry's a guy. He doesn't – if 22, he might say that's not good enough. Who do you think you're talking to? Like, I'm a $25 million guy. I kind of get the impression like that's the kind of stuff he would drive –
I understand that, but he was like, you know, worried about my family for generations. Yeah, you're fine. Like,
probably already has established generational
exactly.
wealth. I would think, but you know, he's not going to a young up and coming team. He's not going to a team that isn't going to be any good. We're talking Miami, Philly, Toronto, maybe a team in LA, maybe a team in New York,
right?
But ultimately, I think it's going to come down to who's going to give him the most money, who's going to give him the most term. And I'm sure other teams will kick tires on him. But I think if the Raptors want him, they can be the team that offers him the most money.
I love the comment generations, though. When you're gone, when you croak, who the hell knows what's going to happen to your money, man? You get it in other people's hands. Goodbye.
Well, it can, but at least you're supplying it. The owners, they have that. Might as well go to the players. So I'm not going to kick tires at that or kick dust at them for that. But he's looking for money. He's looking for respect, and he wants to be paid because he still thinks he can play. And I think it's on the Raptors and whoever else is out there kicking tires on him to decide what that is worth and how much more he's got left. We'll bring that back into the final hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.